This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Writer Marjorie Hudson is drawn to people who are lost, mostly because their journeys home fascinate her. She was lost herself once, living and working too hard in Washington, D.C. When she came to visit a friend in the Triangle, she had a visceral feeling of being found. Then after decades of building her writing life and nurturing her community in Pittsburgh, Marjorie Hudson considers herself to be home. Her long-awaited collection of short stories is populated by lost souls at varying degrees of being found. There's a retired colonel who moved south, and a second wife trying to establish herself in the home her husband shared with his first wife. The book is called Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. Marjorie Hudson joins me in the studio today. Welcome.
Thank you, Frank. It's nice to be here.
A pleasure to have you here and to give us and our listeners a sense of what your feeling is about being home and your connection to North Carolina. Maybe I'll just have you read for us right off the bat, will you?
Great. This is from the first story in the collection. It's called The Clearing. The farmhouse sat on a rise at the end of a long dirt road in a clearing surrounded by fruit trees and 90 acres of pines. It was painted white and peeling, and some former hippie tenant had scribed a mandala on the wall just inside the front door in fine point magic marker. I painted over it, but it bled through again and again. I finally left it there, a pale and pastel version of itself, hanging ghost-like in the hall. My first weeks here, wandering the neglected orchard, driving down dirt roads, walking to check my mail. It seemed that this part of the South was abandoned, left to the tree and to the deer and the wild persimmon tree, and what people remained lived solitary lives. The few I saw were isolated figures in a landscape, a man on a tractor across a field, an old woman bent over her garden. I was the recluse, the woman with dark, wild hair, the stranger in the house at the end of the road.
Marjorie Hudson reading from The Clearing, one of her new collection, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. Does that describe how you fell in love with North Carolina?
It does, in a way. This first story is kind of a love letter to the farmhouse where I first lived when I moved here. And how that happened was I came to visit my friend, and she was an organic farmer, and she was looking for a different farm to rent. And we went to look at this farmhouse. It had been raining for 4 days. When we got to the clearing, the clouds parted, and the sun came out, and a rainbow formed over the house. And this is a true story.
I took it
as a sign, and it really was a beautiful place to live. I gave 30 days' notice and moved south, and I have never regretted it. I've become a born-again Southerner, as my husband, who's born here, likes to say.
Well, tell us what you were doing before that and what brought you here,
huh?
About that visit. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a writer and editor for National Parks magazine, so I was an environmentalist, and I loved being outdoors. I was working really hard. I was working on some special projects that kept me working late and working on weekends.
This is Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C. And I did not get out much. I was working, through nights and weekends.
National Parks Magazine,
yeah,
and you're not getting out.
It was so tempting. I was reading these articles about these wonderful places.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, I'd get out and get to write a story about someplace wonderful, or sneak out and go fishing in the Potomac River or ride my bike. But I realized that it was getting a little too ironic for me. And so I really, I fell in love with it so deeply here and so urgently. I knew I kind of needed to change my life at that time and try a different way. I also wanted to do different kinds of writing, and I knew that living in Washington, D.C. might be too expensive to be experimenting with.
Did it surprise you that you fell in love that fast? Because I know some people come here. I mean, D.C. is southerly, if not south.
It is.
But people who come here from farther north, when they hear about it, when they think about it, think, oh, I can't go south. I can't live in the south, And then they get here and change their mind.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that. Many people in Washington, D.C. are from the South, particularly African-American people. And so I knew many people who had Southern accents, And there was, I didn't realize it at the time, but I already had this kind of invitation to the Southern, and I didn't find out till I moved here that I had some strong Southern roots way, way back. Had always thought of my family as being from the North. But I found in a rural landscape, there was this web of community. I never intended to be a recluse like my character, Liz Enfield, but it knocks on your door. You are noticed when you are a newcomer in the South. And the famous thing in Chatham County is there's this one finger salute, and it's not the finger people think about in New York. It's this, you know, hand on the steering wheel as you go by. Mm-hmm. And I found myself really moved by this, that people would acknowledge a passing person who was a complete stranger.
Well, it seems one of the ways people find themselves in your stories is through community. What is it about the community that interests you?
Well, it's full of particular and diverse people. I think we need each other. I felt at home in a way. My first years were spent in a northern city in a very, very small town where my father was a Methodist minister. People take time to talk to you. People tell you their personal stories in a way that I've become used to. I go other places, and I kind of embody that sometimes, and people think you're getting too personal too fast, and it's a little embarrassing. But, you know, in the South, people really need to know each other. You need your neighbors. My first neighbors here were sort of old-time farmers, and the first some of the first writers I connected with were Laura Sparrow, a farm lady just down the road, who would leave her stories in my mailbox, and I would critique them and coach her, and she would refine them, and was able to work with her on performing her stories and publishing them.
Well, you know, the idea of a perfect community, too, in a perfect world, all of which is not necessarily perfect, not necessarily being good, brings me to the story of the outside world. It seems that's a theme that runs through that story.
Yeah. Two idealistic people come together, a young, sort of naive, spacey Emily Dickinson reading Mennonite girl who comes to UNC and goes to school there for a few years and kind of gets her eye open to how anachronistic her way of life is. And she meets a young man who's a graduate student who loves Ralph Waldo Emerson. And so Emily and Ralph get together, and
this is somebody, by the way, who just does not pay their light bills. You know,
that's
this.
Right. This is
at
kind
least
of a
not
spaced
on time.
Out person.
Right.
Mm. Well, it's John and Jolene are the characters, and they end up in love, and they end up moving to his family farm, and making a world that is separate from the world. And they of course get in trouble right away. They have a child who they don't really quite realize is Down syndrome, and they are have a sudden realization about that when there's a health problem, and their lives end up centering a completely different way than they had dreamed of. The child, of course, in any family, brings you into the world in a different way. It's interesting that I think Ralph Waldo Emerson and his dream of a teeny little house with two chairs, and so that somebody could come and visit, he never really meant for that chair to be a wife, to contain a wife and child. So the dream kind of goes off the tracks there.
Well, that's the great paradox of community, don't you think? I mean, one of the things we like about it is, you know, some of the things you described, a sense of feeling connected, of being able to share our intimate stories. And then there are these conventions, ways in which we can, you know, have our separateness, rules of courtesy in the South, some of the language in the South that doesn't quite mean what it says, and that allows you to sound polite but not be polite, right?
Right.
I mean, sort of all those conventions, so that on the one hand, that kind of civilization and community can be oppressive. It can cut us off from ourselves, and in another way, it can connect us. And so I think the notion of perfection there, the way you describe it, is a good way to get at the paradox.
Yeah, because it is an unattainable goal. Mm. And, you know, I think people also, we have the sustainable farm movement, And I way back in the day, went to work at Mother Earth News right out of high school and learned the ways of magazines and the ways of that movement. And now it's kind of come into fruition in many rural areas, especially Chatham, where I live. And it really strives to transform the world through the food and the lifestyle. And I really admire that greatly. But we always run into trouble because we're human. So.
Right. Well, and then when the exotic becomes a little more routine, it's good. But there are these fringes and extremes, and then you're always butting up against that. And this other question of how newcomers come to know the South, in this case North Carolina, is fascinating. I think one that you handle in Accidental Birds of the Carolinas, the title story. Mm. Tell us a little bit about that. Well, you should probably remind us what an accidental bird is.
Yeah, the title story is named Accidental Birds of the Carolinas, and accidental birds are birds who are blown off course by a great storm or outside their migration pattern or nesting range. And they're just kind of in the wrong place, and the character in the story really is a birder, and he really kind of gets it that he's one of those. and it's about a retiree, a lieutenant colonel, who retires to a retirement community with his wife Anne, and he ends up absolutely loathing it. It's a little too cute for him, but his wife falls in love with it. And this was inspired by a sighting, and this happens to me sometimes as a writer. I was walking my dog down the road, and there was a man, perhaps in his 70s, very fit, running, jogging on the road towards me. And as he passed, he seemed to be kind of have a military bearing, and as he passed, he gave me this look of utter desolation, and I thought, how could a person feel that way and keep running? And I knew I wanted to, it haunted me, and I knew I wanted to write something that would answer that question. So,
will you read for us now?
Yeah. So here's from the beginning of the story, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. Colonel Randolph Jefferson Lee, retired Army, prepares for his daily run, which he's lied about for months, telling Anne he will stay in the neighborhood, he will call her on the cell if he gets in trouble, and he will keep it down to a stroll, a slow walk, no running. He slurps coffee, steals another look at her. Is she snubbing him after their dust-up last night? She asked him to come with her to some crazy spring gala where all the ladies are supposed to wear sundresses and the men are supposed to wear straw hats. Croquet is involved, she said, or cricket, she wasn't sure which, and vodka-spiked lemonade, and it is all supposed to celebrate the first day of the Stonehaven Farmers Market. What does farming have to do with croquet, he'd asked her. It's the dumbest thing I ever heard. He is sure any respectable farmer would laugh up his sleeve at such doings. Why, in God's name, does this place inspire such silliness in his wife, who's been a sensible, intelligent woman for all their 40 years together, the kind of woman who makes wry cracks under her breath to make him smile? The social program here seems modeled after a summer camp for Southern debutantes. Tea and crumpets, balls and juleps. My God, last April, when they were still new here, before he'd figured out their game, they'd bust the newcomers down to some coastal plantation for a party with hoop skirts and a Rhett Butler lookalike. Rand stood cringing in a corner, getting drunk as fast as possible. Anne ate it up, laughing, asking to see the elaborate pantaloons under those skirts, even dancing with the Rhett character, who was paunchy and 40-ish up close, and from what Rand could tell, knew only one dance step. The man led Anne in an endless backward circle, till they both were dizzy and had to sit down. Rand avoided dancing, but he remembers a ridiculous twinge of jealousy about that Rhett character spending so much time touching his wife. Anne seemed to be enjoying that a little too much. To be fair, Anne had agreed later that having the black serving staff sing Dixie for them had been in terrible taste. Maybe they were being ironic, she said with her wry grin. God, I hope so.
Marjorie Hudson reading from the title story of her new collection, Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. That's one of the wonderful things about here, isn't it? The way that history, which is such an important part of, you know, where you are, that difficult, tortured history.
Yes.
You don't walk away from it. You have to find a way to negotiate it. And for an outsider, it can be kind of a difficult adjustment to look it in the face.
Yeah, absolutely. The racial history, the history of farming, Native American history, and all of those things actually just completely fascinated me. When I moved here, when I was working in Washington, D.C., I wrote about sort of large historical events. And, of course, everything in Washington that's historical seems to be a large marble edifice. Mm-hmm. And here in the South, history is a story that's told. History is the life and death of people known to you. And it becomes just so much more visceral, so much more felt to me. So I wanted to write and layer that in my stories as well.
There's a story, I think that's, you'd call it historical, in the collection, The New World Testament, about a friendship between two men.
Yeah.
Tell us about that and its connection to history.
Yeah, it's actually based on a true story. The great friendship between John Lawson, the English explorer of 1701 fame, who wrote a book about his explorations of North and South Carolina, and his friend, whose friendship he documents in his book, and his friend's name was Eno Will. Eno Will was his guide during part of his journey that was in the Eno Nation, somewhere in this area, and his friend gave him his son to raise rather than be converted to Christianity. There was this kind of moment when those were the options. And rather than become English himself, he decided that his son would have a much better time of life if he were raised by an Englishman. So it's a fascinating story, and even more so because of the way John Lawson died, which I won't give away here. But let's just say that the Tuscarora War shows up as part of the story.
You know, there's always this tussle between whether or not we can render history better through fiction and whether we better identify it as that, or should we come up with some form of memoir and history that is a blend of fact and fiction. Where are you on that? I mean, do you feel that fiction really manages or allows us better depth and texture, and we should label it as such?
Or do you want to write an essay on that? You know, I write essays too, and yeah. I write nonfiction, and I have a book called Searching for Virginia Dare that layers fiction, road trip, interview, and all kinds of research. And it's because it's very hard to get at some historical material without trying a lot of different things. And so it turned into kind of a mosaic form where all the shapes were put together around something that's missing in order to kind of make a mirror for that element in history. And so, you know, I think the gift that fiction gives us is it gets to the emotional story, the part that we can all relate to. Other kinds of writing can be more analytical or can be proofs for fiction. But fiction can be the emotional proof of a story.
Marjorie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Marjorie Hudson's new book is called Accidental Birds of the Carolinas. She reads and signs books on Thursday night on the 10th at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham at 7 o'clock. For more information, go to marjoriehudson.com. Coming up after a short break, a local musician composes classical music to accompany the latest techno beats. Stay with us on The State of Things.